Zach has reminded us already about there are many things that are said in the book of Deuteronomy to remind us of. In fact, that seems to me to be the purpose of the book of Deuteronomy. I mean, here we are getting close to the end of the life of Moses, and he pens for the children of Israel a reminder of all the events that have taken place as you read from the Exodus on and the laws that have come from God. And of course, over and over again, what he's reminding them of is the absolute need of obeying God. As we go to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 29, that's where our main text will be tonight in our study. We're reminded here that as Moses has come to this point of chapter 29, thinking about some things that he has just said that brings him to the point of what he's going to say in chapter 29, which is a part of our reading this last week. The children of Israel are gathered together. They're at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, some on either side, as two mountains close by. Mountains not like Mount Mitchell. We're not talking about that. They're more or less kind of big hills, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, and they're half on each side, and you know, it's almost kind of like a theater type effect, and there were blessings and cursings that was pronounced here. And we're reminded of that in chapter 27, there at Mount Ebal, the curses that were decreed by God. God decreeing curses? Oh, indeed. If they do not obey him, if they do not do what God has decreed to them, there will be curses that come upon them. Chapter 28, there's blessings. Blessings are the result of obedience. And so here's what has just been penned. Here's what has just been said in chapters 27 and 28. And it kind of brings us into chapter 29, as we said, is our main text. And the first part of chapter 29, it comes right in from what has been said in chapter 28. He says, "These are the terms of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the Israelites in Moab, in addition to the covenant he had made with them at Horeb." And that kind of concludes some of the thoughts from chapter 27 and 28. But then he goes on in chapter 29 with some things to remember. If we walk away from here tonight only picking up one thing, y'all see this word back here? Remember. Because this is what God is saying. Well, he doesn't actually say remember, but that's the point. Over and over through this chapter, verse 2. "Your eyes have seen all that the Lord did in Egypt." Could we start it this way? "Remember that your eyes have seen all that the Lord did in Egypt to Pharaoh, to all his officials, and to all his land. With your own eyes you saw those great trials, those miraculous signs and great wonders. But to this day the Lord has not given you a mind that understands, or eyes that see, or ears that hear. During the 40 years I led you through the desert, your clothes did not wear out." Could we say remember again? "Remember, your clothes did not wear out, nor did the sandals on your feet. You ate no bread and drank no wine and other fermented drink. I did this so that you might know that I am the Lord your God." That you might remember that I am the Lord your God. He's saying to them, remember what you've seen. Remember what you have experienced. You know, all of these signs and wonders and miracles that had been done throughout the wilderness wanderings were for a reason. It was for a purpose that these events took place. And you would think on one hand, well, how could they forget? How could they not remember? But in years to come, when you see the way they lived and the things that they did, you'd have to think that they forgot, that they did not remember all of these things. You know, the Lord said in verse 4, he says, "But to this day the Lord has not given you a mind that understands, or eyes that see, and ears that hear." You know, God will not force us to see or to respond, to obey. You know, he had given all of these signs, and yet he's not making anybody obey. They're going to have to make a choice. And on one hand, you think about the children of Israel, and we see the way that they go in years to come. You have to wonder a little bit, did they not get it? I mean, did they just not get it. I mean, is that the problem? And they just didn't obey. It's a problem we have sometime too. We struggle with that. You know, sometimes the carnal man, it seems, just overcomes the spiritual man. In 1 Corinthians, you might put a marker here in Deuteronomy, but in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul, writing to the church at Corinth, says, verse 14, "But the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, nor can he know them because they are spiritually discerned." You know, if we have a carnal mind, we just won't see and understand the things of God. Only to those who are spiritually discerned. And back to our text and the children of Israel, sometimes they just did not see the things of God. Yes, they saw the miracles. Yes, they saw the signs. Yes, they saw the wonders. But they didn't see them. They didn't get it because they were not spiritually inclined. Lack of spiritual discernment after all that God had brought to them. But that's why Moses is saying, remember, I say Moses. Moses was the pin. It's God who is saying these things. Well, look a little bit further in our text, in verse 7, when basically the Lord is saying, remember the covenant. Remember and carefully follow the terms, verse 9, of this covenant, so that you may prosper in everything you do. All of you are standing today in the presence of the Lord your God, your leaders and chief men, your elders and officials, and all the other men of Israel, together with your children and your wives and the aliens living in your camps who chop your wood and carry your water. You are standing here in order to enter into a covenant with the Lord your God, a covenant the Lord is making with you this day and sealing with an oath. To confirm you this day as his people, that he may be your God as he promised you and as he swore to your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm making this covenant with an oath, not only with you who are standing here with us today in the presence of the Lord our God, but also with those who are not here today. So it's this renewal of the covenant, which happens a number of times throughout the history of the children of Israel. And Moses is trying to say again, pen for these people, remember the covenant that the Lord has made. And to submit. The covenant is of no value, it's of no benefit to those who will not listen to it, those who will not obey the covenant. We can understand that too, or we should. We should remember that too. Because our theme is just keeps going over and over and over again. Remember the covenant. In Romans chapter 6. In Romans chapter 6, beginning at verse 16, you might look with me. In Romans chapter 6, the Apostle Paul says in verse 16, "Do you not know that to whom you present yourself servants to obey, you are that one's servants whom you obey, whether of sin to death or of obedience to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were servants of sin, yet you have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became servants of righteousness." You know, today we have a covenant, so to speak, with God. Or at least we can. Should we choose to have a relationship with God, we can. And what Paul was saying is that to these Christians he's writing to, you made a choice. And you did so based on how you were moved in your heart to have this relationship with God. You know, thanks be to God that though you were servants of sin, you obeyed from the heart, and you've become now servants of God. It's a covenant. It's a relationship that we have with God. Well, the children of Israel had a covenant too, but they didn't do a very good job at remembering that covenant. Because even now, in the latter part of Deuteronomy, when it seems as though there is a good relationship with God, the people having a relationship with God because of obedience, it's not going to last so long. But in our text, again, he goes on to say, here we go, remember, verse 16, remember, you yourselves know how we lived in Egypt. and how we passed through the countries on our way here, you saw among them their detestable images and idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold. Make sure there is no man or woman, clan or tribe among you today whose heart turns away from the Lord our God to go and worship the gods of those nations. Make sure there is no root among you that produces such bitter poison. Remember now to serve God. Remember to not be drawn away by these other influences, these other gods and these idols. Remember the danger of these idols. You've seen it. You've seen those who have followed their gods and how it didn't really help Egypt any, because Jehovah God had power to overcome those gods. Remember your God and what he has done for you. Well, you know, most of us are not so inclined to take a little statue and set it up somewhere and you know, worship that. And we think of idols just that way. And, well, truly, some do worship idols like that. Maybe that's not how it's presented to us so much. Colossians chapter 2. Colossians chapter 2. There are so many philosophies that just impede our minds, it seems. It's not a new problem. It's not a new issue. Paul was dealing with that in the first century. He wrote to the church at Colossae, chapter 2, verse 8, "Beware lest anyone take you captive through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the traditions of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ." You know, when we get carried away with any idea, doctrine, philosophy of man, that which does not come from God, let's understand that's no different than us just obeying or bowing down before an idol. Remember, he says, how you lived in Egypt and the countries that we have passed through since then who bowed down to these detestable images and idols. And now remember those things, and don't let anybody else, you know, to turn their heart away from God because of these things. Remember. In our text, he goes on again. Verse 19, "Remember when such a person hears the words of this oath, he invokes a blessing on himself and therefore thinks, 'I will be safe even though I persist in going my own way. This will bring disaster on the watered land as well as the dry. The Lord will never be willing to forgive him. His wrath and zeal will burn against the man. All the curses written in this book will fall upon him, and the Lord will blot out his name from under heaven. The Lord will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for disaster, according to all the curses of the covenant written in this book of law." When we read through the blessings, chapters 27, 28, when we read through the blessings, they're a whole lot easier to swallow. It's always easier to listen to blessings. But the curses, there's actually more curses that are given, and much more specific, really, in description, the curses are. And so here, again, Moses is penning these words, you know, remember that if you stay in your sinful way, the Lord will know it. You know, you're going to be separated from him. In fact, even as this text says, as we just read here, you know, names blotted out from under heaven. It's kind of familiar verbiage to some things that Jesus would say later. Very consistent, as we've said before, God is always so consistent. But here God is saying through Moses long ago, giving this warning, remember that if you choose to walk in a sinful name, your name's going to be blotted out. In the book of Revelation, chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20 and verse 15. "Anyone not found written in the book of life will be cast into the lake of fire." You know, we can understand something here about the judgment that is to come. And understand that when we choose to not walk with the Lord, he'll be content with us to make that choice. But our names will not be written in the book of life, as verse 12 would say in that same text right there. God will not suffer his authority to be trampled on by idols. But those who choose to follow him, he'll let them follow them. But their name will be blotted out of the book of life. In our text again, remember, we see the word, remember, verse 22. Remember your children who follow you in later generations, and foreigners who come from distant lands will see the calamities that have fallen on the land and the diseases with which the Lord has afflicted it. The whole land will be a burning waste of salt and sulfur, nothing planted, nothing sprouted, no vegetation growing on it. It will be like the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in fierce anger. All the nations will ask, why has the Lord done this to this land? Why this fierce, burning anger? God's anger would be so great because he has told his people what they must do. He has, with no uncertain terms, told his people what they must do to be counted as his, what they must do to obey, and has said, here are the consequences if you disobey. Remember, Moses is saying, remember you've been warned. What happened to that land of milk and honey that they were promised? God delivered them into a land of milk and honey. But in time, because of their disobedience, because of their sin, the land of milk and honey was not so delicious anymore. But it was by their own fault, because they did not obey. And because they did not obey, curses came. Verse 25, and the answer will be, it is because the people abandoned the covenant of the Lord, the God of their fathers, the covenant he made with them when he brought them out of Egypt. They went off and worshipped other gods and bowed down to them, gods they did not know, gods he had not given them. Therefore, the Lord's anger burned against this land so that he brought on it all the curses written in this book. In furious anger and in great wrath, the Lord uprooted them from their land and thrust them into another land as it is now. God's already foretelling the captivity that was going to come upon them. Moses, even though Moses is not going to cross over into the promised land, he's soon going to pass away. But Moses already knows and understands here that the people are not going to obey God. Not in the long term, they're not. And there are consequences that will come upon them, and they'll actually be taken out of the land that God was about to give them. There are always consequences to sin. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. It's one of those passages that sometimes we don't like to read. In fact, sometimes when we share this with someone that we're studying with, you can almost see eyes roll back in the head. You know, I thought God was a loving God. I mean, I thought that he wanted to save us. Well, indeed, he is a loving God. He sent his son. He sent his son for the reason, for the purpose of saving us from our sins. He's demonstrated his love in that way, but he's a righteous God. He's a just God. And he has always said that if we disobey him, there are consequences that come. 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 8, in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who do not know God and on those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. Consequences. Indeed, there are consequences. These will be punished with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power when he comes in that day to be glorified in his saints and to be admired among all those who believe, because our testimony among you was believed. The two sides are drawn out. Those who believe, those who obey, and those who refuse to obey, and the consequences that come with that. Remember. Remember, Moses pins. No, he doesn't put the word remember. But that's what he's saying over and over again. In each of these instances, he's saying to remember these things. And then verse 29 is interesting to me. He doesn't actually say remember again. But here's something for us to remember. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. But the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. Remember that God has given to us all that we need to know and understand His will. We can know the will of God. Fundamental principle here that is defined for us regarding divine revelation, that God has told us what He wants us to know, or that He has told us what we need to know. But there's things He hasn't told us, someone says. Indeed, that's right. But that's okay, because He has revealed to us the things that we need to know. And yes, there are some things that God has not told us. He has not told us because He is God and He does not have to tell us everything. But the secret things belong to God. But He doesn't hold back on things that we need to know. 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3 gives us a little bit of insight to the power of the word that He has delivered. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16. All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. God has given us all that we need to know, so that we can be counted as His. But what will we do with it? It's easy for us to say, well, we'll just obey. And I hope we do. I hope that's the choice. Just like I'm sure that there were some of the children of Israel that, well, there were those who did obey. There were those, even the bleakest of times, who were still counted as the people of God because they were obedient. But not all. And that's no different today, is it? But we can make a choice. Remember these things. Remember the things that God has said to us, the words that He has given us, the instructions that He has delivered for us, so that we can know His will, so that we can obey, so that we can be saved. If you need to respond in some way to the gospel tonight, we hope you'll come as we stand and sing.